friends, today we're taking it back to the basics, and we are going to go over if you are starting from square one and you want to balance your blood sugar, reverse your insulin resistance, PCOS, improve your symptoms, improve your energy, burn fat, all those things. If you want to start balancing your blood sugar, where do you start? It's going to be a great episode, so stick around.
You're listening to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast with your host and nutritional therapist, Danielle Hamilton. I'm Danny, and I'm here to answer your questions and give you the tools to find freedom from sugar and carb cravings with real food and lifestyle tips so you can heal your body, balance your blood sugar, and feel amazing. Remember, the content discussed in this podcast is intended as general information only. It's not intended as one-on-one medical advice, so please consult with your healthcare practitioner before making any changes in diet and lifestyle. Let's get started with today's show.
And welcome back to the show. I am Danny, and I am your host, and I'm so grateful that you are joining me for another episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. This is your first episode. Welcome to the show. I am so happy to have you, and make sure you click on that subscribe button so you will always be updated whenever a new episode comes out. And if you love the podcast and you've already been a listener, please go ahead and click those 5 stars. It really helps the show to grow. It helps something with the algorithm, and it shows the show to more people. So if you are grateful for this information, if you're learning a lot and want to share it with others, all you got to do is click those 5 stars. And if you feel so inclined, leave a short review. I like to start off the podcast with a gratitude segment. And during this segment, I like for you to also think about something that you feel grateful for, because gratitude is the fastest way to bring in more abundance and more wonderful things into our lives. And it is just such an important practice to have. And I am trying to, so I'm learning in this book, Atomic Habits, I'm learning that one of the best things to do is do what's called habit stacking. And so if you have trouble creating new habits, which all of us probably do, if you have trouble, what you should do is you should link a new habit to something that you already do, so an existing habit. One of my habits is to wake up and make coffee. And so what I've been doing is I wake up, make coffee, and then as I'm having my coffee, I put my phone down and I focus on gratitude. And so that's how I have been able to, for the past like 2 or 3 days, literally, I have trouble making new habits sometimes. So I'm trying to do this new habit linking. And so for the past 2 or 3 days, I've done my gratitude while drinking my coffee. And it's a great way to have a reminder, because if you just are like, oh, I want to put more gratitude into my life, I want to think about what I'm grateful for, you're going to keep going through your day, and we're on autopilot most of the time. And our brain does this to conserve energy. It puts our habits, it like kicks it to subconscious mind, so then we can free up some space. And so this is just what our brain does. And so by habit stacking, it's a good way to kind of hack making a new habit. And so if you want to try your gratitude, you can do it when you listen to the podcast, or you can try to stack it with another habit. I mean, I've even told clients sometimes where I'm telling them to try to incorporate the 4-7-8 breath, which is a very calming breath. You inhale for 4, hold for 7, exhale for 8. I'm trying to tell them, okay, every time you go to the bathroom during the day, do the 4-7-8 breath, because at least you'll remember. So you're sitting on the toilet and then you're doing the 4-7-8 breath. So it's something you need, some sort of cue to remind you to implement this habit. So that's why the habit stacking can be really helpful. Okay, so what am I grateful for? I am grateful for the ability to continue to learn and grow and learn new things that upgrade my life constantly. So as a one on the Enneagram, we're called the reformer or the perfectionist or the improver. These are all names given to this type one Enneagram. And I totally fit that model so well, because I am literally always trying to upgrade everything in my life. When I heard about what biohacking is, it's where you literally try to, like a computer hacker, you're hacking your biology. You're trying to upgrade your experience. And so for me, I thought that was so awesome, because I'm always trying to improve everything. That's why I love my Aura ring, because it tells me how I sleep. And so I can change the input so I get a different output. That's why I love my continuous glucose monitor. That's why I like checking my blood sugar with my blood sugar meter, because you're able to see this feedback on what you're doing with your body. So I just love that I have access to a lot of different technology, like my Oura Ring, like the CGM, to help me learn about my body and to be able to share it with you all and for people to listen to me, because I have, even before I've had this podcast or my platform or my Instagram, I've always wanted to share what I learn because I feel so passionate about it. I get really passionate about things and just want to share everything I learn with everyone else and just shout it from the rooftops. And so I'm really grateful for this platform to be able to share what I learn so we can all grow together and improve together and change the world one step at a time. So that is my gratitude for today. And then something I have been digging lately, let's see. I have been really into, my cows. So I don't have cows. If you follow me on Instagram, you know, if you've seen my stories, that I live in Orlando. I don't live in downtown Orlando. I live in like the suburbs. I don't live that close to Disney. It's like 35, 40 minutes away. So I live in a regular suburban neighborhood, and there is a giant field behind my house. So my house, the back fence is this, it's like a cinder block wall that's about 4 feet high because I could just see right over it. And so beyond that wall is just a big open giant field. And I don't know why it's there. So when my wife and I moved into this house, we were standing on the back porch and she's like, "Are those cows?" I was like, "What? Where?" And I turned around and sure enough, there were cows out grazing in the field. I was like, "Oh my God, that's insane." And so there were some periods where we didn't see the cows for like months at a time. And then, but I don't know, they just are around sometimes and they've been around a lot lately, like on the daily. And so you can see them in this field, which also connects. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll know that I always walk to this lake and there's a dock. And then sometimes you can see the cows from there because it all connects to it, all borders that field. And so I, yesterday and sometime last week, the cows love carrots. They come to the back and I'm always like, "Oh my gosh, I need to feed the cows." And so I'll run and grab whatever we have in the fridge and try to give it to the cows to see if they like it. And so I had these organic carrots and the cows love them. And so I bought like a huge bag for them and I brought out a bunch of carrots to the field and I was holding them because one time I brought stuff and I brought it in a bowl and then they were all like attacking the bowl at the end and I was like, I just had to leave it there. I'm like, "Oh my gosh." I did end up going back to get it, but this time I just brought the carrots in my arms and I was walking out to the field and they just start surrounding you. They're so cute and they're so afraid of you. So if I were to like step or make a sudden move, they all like jump back. But they, I don't know what it is. I didn't know that I was such a cow person, but I'm a huge cow person. So now it's like cat lady / cow lady. Like I feel like I have a new title and I'm just so obsessed with these cows. There's something so magical about being around them. They're just so big and magical and wonderful. And so I don't know. I just love them so much. And so eventually my wife and I would like to have some cows and have sort of like a regenerative farm. And, you know, this is in the distant future, but it's something that we really want. And I'm after experiencing being with these cows, I'm like, I just need to have cows. Like I need to have them. And I know that eventually they're going to go out to slaughter. And that's very hard to wrap my mind around, but this is, I feel like it's also bringing me closer to understanding and honoring the food system because so many of us are just pretty much all of us, unless you live on a farm, we're just so detached from our food. Like there was Maria Emmerich, she's been on the podcast before. She is a cookbook author and nutritionist, and she posted a photo on Instagram of her, she goes bow hunting. So she shot a deer and she was, you know, her family eats what they kill. And someone commented on the photo, like, "You should just go get meat at the grocery store like everyone else." And it's like, But doesn't that meat need to die? Like, we are just so, so removed from what needs to happen from our food that I think it's also a reminder to really just honor and cherish and feel grateful for this cycle of life and this circle of life that we live in. And without death, there cannot be life. Like, for example, in the soil, in organic soil, they put bone meal, blood meal, and decaying matter into the soil, and that gives it, that's fertilizer, right? And so a lot of people in the plant-based community especially, I understand where they're all coming from, because it's like, I look at this cow and it's like, oh my gosh, of course I don't want you to die. It would be amazing if we could all eat and it wouldn't affect any animals, but that's unfortunately just not the reality of things. And so even, you know, I mean, this could totally go off on a tangent, but like when you have a farm that's all monocropped and it's all like corn or soybeans or canola or just one big crop, nothing can live in that soil. And especially peas, because that's a big vegan food replacement, like protein replacement. And they have people literally at the border of these pea fields, and you can look this up, and they just are like shooting foxes and rabbits and moles and animals that are trying to get to these peas. So what I'm saying is that there is no life without death. It is a rebirthing cycle. So there's death and decay, and that builds up the soil, and then plants can grow from that soil, and we can eat the plants or eat the animals that eat those plants. And so it's really sad to grasp this, but it's so important that we honor it and we do it right, right? So supporting the farmers that have regenerative practices like white oak pastures and force of nature meats and things like that, there are farmers out there who are doing things right, and they're doing this regenerative farming. It's taking carbon out of the atmosphere, it's packing it into the soil, it's actually helping with biodiversity. So instead of this monocrop field where there's only like GMO corn being grown and all these pesticides where nothing else can survive, like weeds and bugs like can't even exist in this world. And then we're turning that around and supporting the people who have this beautiful biodiverse farm with all different varieties of grasses and plants and clovers and microbes in the soil. And then that brings to it all different insects and bugs and pollinators and bees and butterflies. And that's going to bring all different types of birds. And so you just have this beautiful lushness, and it's just incredible. And so that is, I think, this utopia that plant-based people are actually wanting, but they don't realize that you can't take the cow out of the equation. And so this is much better described, and I'm going to have to do a whole episode on it. It's just going to take me a lot of work to set it up because it's not what I specialize in. So I'm going to have to do all this research and write things down, but I'm going to do it for you. But basically, I want you to, if this kind of conversation is new to you, or you haven't heard about it, or you want to learn more about it from someone who is more of a professional and expert in the area than me, I really recommend watching the documentary and reading the book Sacred Cow by Anna Rogers and Rob Wolf. And so that's an amazing documentary. I'm not sure where to access it at the moment, but just Google it, you'll find it. I think that they do have it available for screening, and there is a book. And then there's another documentary that's on Netflix called Kiss the Ground. And that one is actually a plant-based documentary, like it's from plant-based people. But the great part about that is that they're saying that they do, like, they're admitting that we do need the cows. And the point of it is that if you take the cows off the land and put them separately from the farming, it doesn't work. And so what we need to do is get the cows back onto the land, because this is going to help improve the quality of the soil, help things grow, help to reduce all these carbon emissions that are actually being created when we till the soil. It's so, so interesting. I watched both of those documentaries at the edge of my seat with like my mouth wide open. They're so good. And I really, oh my goodness, I really, really recommend them. So Kiss the Ground and Sacred Cow, they are amazing. So that is my long story about what I'm into lately. All right. So before we get started with the meat and potatoes, I guess hold the potatoes of the episode, I wanted to just tell you that my upcoming blood sugar masterclass is this Sunday, the 24th of February, 2021 at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And the link to sign up will be in the show notes. It's also in my Instagram bio. It's also, if you are on my email list, I sent out the link to my subscribers. So you can find the information that way. If you really can't find it, you can just message me on Instagram. It's Danielle Hamilton Health, and I will happily send you the link to sign up. So I am, if you're loving the podcast and you really want to take like a deep dive and be able to ask me questions, and there's also going to be amazing giveaways. I'm so excited. And this is for people, even for those who can't make it live. So it's going to be recorded. If you can't make it live, it's no problem. You will still be entered into the giveaways. And so far, there are 4 giveaways. There's a bunch of Redmond Real Salt products. That's brand new. I haven't announced that yet anywhere. There is a blood sugar and ketone meter from ForaCare that come with 25 of each, the blood sugar and ketone strips. It's the meter that I use and I absolutely love. And then also, there's going to be a giveaway of a personal consult with me, and you get a personalized supplement protocol with 20% off all your supplements. And then the last giveaway is the biggest one, and that is a seat in my next round of the Balance Unlocked project, which is going to be in March. So if you are wanting to take a deeper dive into all of this information and, like I said, be able to ask me questions, I would love to see your faces, and I would love to see you face to face and help you out even more. So that would be really awesome to see you all there. And that is, like I said, this Sunday, January 24th. And the link to purchase tickets is in the show notes. It's only $33. I wanted to make it really affordable, but it's going to be lots of juicy information and plus all those giveaways. All right, so let's start with today. If we are starting from scratch, if you are like, okay, Danny, I've been listening to your podcast and I'm taking in all this information, or you're like, I'm totally brand new and I just found your podcast and I know that I have a problem with sugar or my blood sugar, or I have diabetes, or my family has a history of diabetes, I have PCOS, any of these things, and you're just wanting to know like a list of what should I avoid? What should I take out of my diet if I don't want to do everything all at one time, because that is overwhelming and it's also not really reasonable. And for some people, it can really stress out your body to do everything at once. And so when we're thinking about doing this, this is not a crash diet. This is a new way of living and this is a lifestyle. And so these are my 10 things to think about removing when you want to improve your blood sugar, weight, reverse your insulin resistance, etc., etc. This would be the 10-step process that I would recommend. Okay, so we're starting from scratch. The first thing to take out would be vegetable oils. Vegetable oils are actually not even vegetables. I don't know, this must have been some sort of like marketing ploy, but mostly they're made out of seeds. But the vegetable oils I'm talking about are canola oil, which is also called seed oil, and the other ones are corn oil, cottonseed oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil. So there's 3 C's and 3 S's, and then there's 2 that don't fit, grapeseed and rice bran. So all of those oils, one of the easiest ways to kind of think about this is that all of those oils, while you may not be familiar with how they're made, I do recommend going on YouTube and looking up how canola oil is made. It's disgusting. They need all sorts of like solvents and hexanes and bleaching and ammonia and steaming and degumming. It's this whole crazy, disgusting process that happens to try to make this oil edible. And these oils directly contribute to insulin resistance. And so they don't do anything to your blood sugar in the meantime, and they are in so many processed and packaged foods, restaurants, whether it's McDonald's or whether it's a 5-star Michelin restaurant, most of them cook with some sort of blend of canola and soybean oil. And so these oils are really hard to fully eliminate from your diet. Also, chickens are fed soy. And so there's a lot of ways that we can be exposed to these oils beyond just cooking with them. So first and foremost, we want to get rid of everything in our pantry that has, or in the fridge, that has these oils in them. And so that would be the first step, is going through, looking at the oils that you cook with, and then reading all the ingredients of the foods that are in your house and looking for these oils. They are in everything. It's crazy. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, I have nothing left to eat. Some of you, because they are just literally in so many things. And so it's getting them out of the oils you cook with, in the foods that you buy, and then really working on cooking foods from home, because this is going to reduce your exposure to these vegetable oils. It's super, super important. And that is step one, because a lot of times, of course, the fat that we eat gets incorporated into our bodies. It becomes us, right? That's why we eat, so we can rebuild and use the nutrients to fuel us. And so when we eat fat, it gets incorporated into our cells, because all of our cells are, the membrane of the cells are made with fatty acids and cholesterol, actually. And so when we eat these vegetable oils, they get into our body fat and actually damage the fats. And they create free radicals, which can lead to cancer and growths and things like that. And they are just complete metabolism destroyers. They block our ability to burn fat cleanly for fuel and to burn our own body fat, which is huge, which is one of the biggest things that we're all trying to do, right? So these would be number one. If you don't do anything else, just get rid of these vegetable oils and you will be so much better off. So that is step number one. Number two, if we're starting from scratch, wanting to just start eliminating things one by one, the second thing I would take away would be any kind of added or refined sugar. So this is a big category. And so this is where we would want to eliminate adding sugar to any sort of recipe or to our coffee in the morning. And so we'd also want to look for things, different food products, when we look at the labels, we want to make sure that they don't have any sugar added to them. So this might say sugar or cane sugar, high fructose corn syrup, maltodextrin, dextrose, agave. There's so many different ones. You can Google, there's all sorts of little infographics out there on the interwebs that say like 75 different names for sugar. And it's important to get familiar with these names, because they are on labels and they sneakily try to add sugar into the labels. So even if it says like, no, like 1 gram of sugar, and then it might say that there's no grams of sugar and then still have sugar on the label. That's really common. But sometimes you'll see, like with, let's say, bacon or something, you will see it cured with sugar. So if it says 0 grams of sugar and it's just cured with it, that I would say you can pass, because it's not going to taste sweet. So we want to get things that add, like take out things that are actually adding sugar. And we also want to make sure you familiarize yourself with all the different names of sugar. So that would be something that we would want to get out right away, because we really want to start changing over our taste buds and not getting so into these sweet tastes and needing those sweet tastes. The more sweetness we add, the more sweetness we'll need to reach that same threshold, because our body kind of numbs out to it. And so it's really important for switching over your brain chemistry and everything as well. So number three, I would say, to things to get rid of, and this is going to be a hard category for a lot of people, but this is a huge one for your health and your blood sugar, is getting rid of flour and refined grain products. So that means anything made with flour. So that could be any sort of anything that has dough. So pizza, bread, muffins, bagels, pancakes, cookies, donuts, cupcakes, anything breaded. A lot of times things are breaded, and that can, it's, I've had people message me like, oh, I had some chicken nuggets from Chick-fil-A and my blood sugar skyrocketed. I was so surprised. And so you think that even you're just getting something that has a little bit of flour on the outside, not that big of a deal. It's a huge deal for your blood sugar. And so I'm going to also give you a reminder here that the more refined a food is, the more high it will spike your blood sugar. And when we talk about refining that process, because we're not in factories making food, I didn't really know what that was before I got into this. So I'm going to explain it a little bit. So we have a grain, like we have a wheat berry, right? We don't use that wheat berry to make things. We have to refine it. So we need to grind it up and then use certain processes to extract certain parts of it. And it just leaves this tiny little flour piece. And that gets so quickly absorbed in your bloodstream. It's essentially like having sugar. And so the top three things to avoid for insulin resistance and things that you really just want to get out of your diet for optimal health, like honestly, you will just not be very healthy if you eat these things on a regular basis. If you eat them once in a blue moon, you probably, you know, that's not really changing, moving the needle very much, right? We're talking about things that you do on a regular basis. This could be weekly, this could be monthly, this could be daily. So we don't want to have these things on the regular. And these top three, the biggest ones are the vegetable oils, the added sugars or refined sugar, and flour. So we want to get rid of all of these things. And so a lot of people are like, okay, you want me to get rid of flour, but how do I eat? Because you can't have sandwiches or pasta or pizza. And so we want to think about just a quick tip. The way I think about making a plate of food is thinking about making some sort of animal protein, whether that be eggs or fish or beef or poultry, and then having some sort of vegetable and some sort of fat. And so we need to get away from this typical thought of like, okay, how can I make a sandwich but without bread? You don't need to make a sandwich. You can have something else. And so it's definitely tricky at the beginning to figure that out. And you can always follow me on Instagram. I have a lot of saved recipes and my highlights and different meal ideas and different meal prepping ideas. And we need to think about getting out of this paradigm of having waking up and having a sweet breakfast and then having a sandwich for lunch and pasta for dinner and pizza on the weekends. All of these things are really, really keeping us stuck. So the next thing, the next category I wanted to include for things to avoid would be sweet drinks. And so if we're getting out the refined sugar, of course we wouldn't be having things like soda and mixers and alcohol. But then there's those other areas where it's like beer and fruit juices, even fresh pressed juice. If it's not 100% vegetable juice with maybe like lemon, which hardly has any sugar or carbohydrates in it. So if you're having juices, these can be filled with sugar and they really, really spike our blood sugar. And so things like coffee drinks with all sorts of additives. And sometimes we forget, we think about the food that we're eating, but not the things that we're drinking. A lot of times people live and drink so many energy drinks just to, you know, stay out up throughout the day. And these energy drinks, of course, some of them have artificial sweeteners, which we'll get to in just a moment, but these energy drinks are really, really bad. So what can you drink? Oh, and I also see tons of people drinking so many kombuchas, and this was me. I would always have kombucha almost every single day. And if you're drinking kombucha for the probiotics, that's like drinking soda to get hydrated. It doesn't work. There's so much sugar and so few probiotics that there's such better sources to get those probiotics from if that's the point of drinking the kombucha. So, you know, a few sips of kombucha, not so terrible if you have it after a meal, but having like a whole bottle of GT's kombucha is definitely something that you want to avoid if you're trying to balance your blood sugar. So that would be and let's talk about what we can drink. We can drink water, sparkling water, squeeze some lemon or lime into your water, make infused water with like cucumbers and mint and berries and things like that. You can do green tea, black coffee, or you can have coffee as long as it doesn't have any type of sugar in it. But we will get to that in a bit. And I always recommend to have organic coffee, because coffee is one of the most highly sprayed crops with pesticides. So always, always, always get organic coffee if you can. And then we'll think about things like other things that we can drink would be bone broth or pure vegetable juice with some lemon in it. And those would be blood sugar healthy things to drink. And some people do, I always like to add some Redmond's Real Salt to my water and also add some electrolyte mineral drops, because that helps to keep me really hydrated and it helps you feel just way more satisfied than if you're just having plain water. All right, so we are up to number 5. The first 4 have been vegetable oils, refined sugar, flour and grain products, and liquid sugar. And now let's get into some of the nitty-gritty. So one of the things that you'll definitely want to remove would be grains. And these would be things like rice, quinoa, oats, barley, millet, rye, things like that. And I'm talking even in their whole form. And so yesterday I had sushi and it had white rice on it and my blood sugar shot up so high. It was crazy to watch because my blood sugar has been so good. Even though I have been eating some carbohydrates, it has not brought my blood sugar over 100. And yesterday with the sushi, I had 2 rolls and my blood sugar went to about 150, which is pretty high, and it's over that safe range where you don't want to see it go over 140 at all. But ideally having it a little bit lower is even better, because that's going to, keeping your blood sugar in a tightly controlled range is the name of the game. That is what balanced blood sugar means. And that is a blood sugar pattern that is going to set you up for success, feeling good, feeling energized, and setting you up for long-term health as well. So these grains, even though they're not sugary, they contain starch. And starch are just long chains of sugar put together. So as soon as you chew them, you are actually digesting them into simple sugars. And so if you look at something like a rice cake, I mean, that is something that will raise your blood sugar like crazy. So that, because it's refined and it's just the rice. And so remember, keeping in mind that anything refined will raise your blood sugar more than something that's a whole food, but still these types of things like grains are, and different people will be more sensitive to one or the other, fruit or grains, but the grains definitely will raise your blood sugar. Then our next category is high carbohydrate fruit. So this is including things like bananas and tropical fruits like mangoes and pineapples. These have so much sugar in them. There's 45 grams of carbohydrate in a banana. That is just insane. And the more yellow it is, the more ripe it is, the higher the carb content. And I used to have bananas all the time. I used to put bananas in my coffee. I would make iced coffee. I know it sounds weird, but I got it on a menu and then I recreated it. This is what I used to do. I used to do iced coffee, frozen bananas, coconut milk, and cinnamon, and I would blend it, and it was really, really good. But that still has a ton of sugar in it because I'm having like half a banana. And so I just added like 20 something carbs to my coffee. So that is something. And what did I do? I made it liquefied. So that's not good either. So when we're talking about liquid sugar, I also mean things like smoothies, which, unless you're making it super, super, super low carb, which is kind of hard to do, and most people don't do that, I would definitely recommend to get rid of those smoothies as well. And of course, these high carbohydrate fruits. And another thing that we don't see with the fruit is that fruit sugar is some of it is glucose and some of it is fructose. And fructose doesn't really raise your blood sugar. So, but it does cause a lot of damage because the liver needs to process it. So a little bit of fructose here and there, if you're having like a tiny, tiny bit of fruit every once in a while, is not going to be bad. But it's when we have things like every day, this is actually unnatural. Even though fruit is something that's natural, it grows from the ground, we as humans have bred fruit to be very filled with sugar. It didn't used to grow like this. So it's not this innocent, put a health halo on it type of food. Fruit is unnaturally sweet. And so using tiny, tiny bits of it can be okay. and having lower carbohydrate fruits instead would be better, but these higher carbohydrate fruits are something really good to get out. And then number 7, I put moderate carbohydrate fruits would be the second step, would be another step, because those things they're just going to spike your blood sugar if you're sensitive. And I was paleo, and so I was eating none of those things on the list, except I wasn't eating grains, I wasn't eating added sugar, I wasn't having flour or vegetable oils, and I still had crazy blood sugar issues. And this was because I was eating so much fruit. And so I always looked at fruit as like, oh, this is fine, it's natural, I'm eating fruit, but it got me into a lot of trouble. Even on something like Weight Watchers, I know that they say that fruits are like free. They're free points. You don't use them up. And that's crazy to me because fruit is not a free food. We need to stop looking at it like that. We need to look at it as what it is, like something that is going to raise your blood sugar like crazy, especially if you eat it by itself, and especially if you choose these very high carbohydrate fruits. So like I said, number 7 is going to be moderate carbohydrate fruits. We want to get those out, and those are things like peaches, cherries, apples, pears, some of the stone fruits. Those are going to be more moderate carbohydrate. And so if you don't have that much of a problem with your blood sugar, you could probably add a little bit of those in without seeing a big spike. But if you eat them and you do have blood sugar issues, they are going to continue to keep you on this track. It's not a good choice of a snack to have, especially if it's by itself, because it's going to just raise your blood sugar and cause it to come crashing back down again. And so remembering the other rule that I talk about, no naked carbs, and that is don't have just carbs on their own. Always have some fat and protein first before you have carbs, because that is going to help to slow their absorption. So if you're still at like number 1 and 2 on the list, but you're thinking ahead, another tip that you can add in is have your carbohydrates last, because that will help to reduce that spike that they will put out. Okay, moving right along. We are up to number 8. So the 8th thing that we want to think about getting rid of would be beans and legumes, or in some other countries they call them pulses. And so these things, even though so many people think about them as like a high protein food, and in the plant kingdom, they are a high protein food. But in terms of all food, they're not that high in protein, and they're actually pretty carbohydrate dense. And so these would be things like any sort of beans, chickpeas, and things like peas and peanuts would fall into this category. Although some people do fine with having some peanut butter every once in a while. But it's just something that you'll want to look out for when you're eating. You just can't eat a super high amount of these things, because especially at the beginning, now if you're looking to go into ketosis, that could be something that kicks you out. But a lot of people still do peanut butter on keto. So if that's something that will keep you happy, go ahead and do it. But if you really want to work on this blood sugar control, getting out the beans would be really helpful. And so beans, I would say, would be a little bit worse than the like things like peanuts and peas, but beans are, especially if we have, you know, people have bigger amounts of them, it is a ton of starch, and there's also anti-nutrients. They're hard to digest. So that would be something that I recommend taking out. And then number 9 is going to be caffeine. And so it's not something that affects every single person's blood sugar. So this is one that you're going to want to test your blood sugar and see if you have a reaction to it. But I know that whenever I drink coffee, I have a blood sugar response to the caffeine in the coffee. And so I have weaned myself onto pure decaf, and I still do have some sort of blood sugar reaction to it. So sometimes my blood sugar will go up a little bit, but a lot of times my blood sugar just actually goes down a little bit, because there's a cortisol release with the caffeine, and that is going to lead to a blood sugar response and then an insulin response to that. And so that's why you might see the blood sugar going down, or you might see the blood sugar going up a little bit. But caffeine is definitely one that you'll want to work your way off of, especially if you're having a lot of it throughout the day, if you're relying on it. And even for those people who use caffeine when they're fasting, they have black coffee, that still, to me, that breaks a fast. If it's going to, anything that's going to cause your blood sugar to go up is going to break a fast in my mind. But if that's what's getting you through the fasting, that's totally fine, because you don't need to do 100% of a water fast to get benefits. You can still get benefits from including coffee in your fast if that's something you do. If you want to take it to the next level, try it without the coffee. And last but not least, number 10 would be non-nutritive sweeteners. So these are things like artificial sweeteners and also just sweeteners that people use that don't have any calories in them. So this would be things like, the worst offenders are going to be things like aspartame, sucralose, which is Splenda, acesulfame, potassium. There's a few of them out there that are really, really bad. But then there's the common ones that are used on keto, which are stevia, and then monk fruit, and then the sugar alcohols like xylitol and erythritol. So stevia in its whole form would be a better choice. Monk fruit would be a better choice. I would say second best would be the sugar alcohols, but those are made, they're heavily processed and made oftentimes from GMO corn. So they're fine in dental products. A lot of dental products have xylitol, and that's fine. But when we're eating them, they can cause a lot of gut distress, the sugar alcohols, and all non-nutritive sweeteners can spike insulin. So if you are a person who has trouble or who has issues with their blood sugar dropping all the time, you definitely want to avoid these sweeteners, because we don't want to increase our insulin without raising the blood sugar, because that would definitely cause you to have a drop. But then the other thing would be, they also can negatively impact our gut bacteria. They keep us really like hooked on having a sweet taste. And a really interesting anecdote from a client, she messaged me and she's like, Danny, I do not know what's going on, but I am ravenous over the past few days. She's like, I'm just ravenous and I don't know what it is. I'm like, are you still having the electrolytes that have stevia in them? And she's like, yeah, I have Relight from Redmond's Real Salt, which I love that company, but I've had this electrolyte drink, and oh my gosh, it tastes so good. It made me, like, I started drinking it and I just started chugging it, and I chugged the whole thing. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so hungry. Like, I need to get some sort of sugar. It was just too sweet and too delicious. Plus, when you have these like non-nutritive sweeteners, your body thinks that sweetness is coming. So it will raise your insulin, and that will drop your blood sugar. If you raise the insulin without raising the blood sugar goes down, and then that puts you in this craving zone where you're like, you get hungry and then you want to eat carbohydrates. So I told her, take out these sweeteners, take out the electrolytes that you're having. She was also having the Ultima ones, which also have sweeteners in it. And so she wrote to me today, good morning, no Relight or Ultima yesterday, and definitely feeling a difference, not starving. So in one day, it got rid of this like intense hunger. And so these sweeteners are something that you really want to think about getting out as well. So in addition to these 10 things, I wanted to give you a little bonus list here at the end of some non-food things that can also impact your blood sugar that you're going to want to start thinking about as you're making changes. So just a reminder, I have processed food as number one on the list. So just another reminder, the more processed the food, the more it will spike your blood sugar. So I'm going to give you an example of, I had two things, like I had some sweet potatoes, which are a starchy vegetable, and then I had some cassava chips. So cassava is also a starchy vegetable, but this was in chip form. So first it was made into a flour, and then it was made into chips, right? So it was processed. The cassava spiked my blood sugar so much more than the sweet potato fries that I made from home, because it was processed. So anything processed is going to be worse. So if you could choose between plantains and plantain chips, choose the plantains. If you could choose between let's see, a rice cake and rice, choose the rice. So anything that's going to be in its whole form is going to be a better choice. So some other things that are non-food-ish type things that affect your blood sugar would be a bad night's sleep. So even just one night of bad sleep can impact your blood sugar. But a lot of people have trouble sleeping because of their dysregulated blood sugar. So this goes both ways. So it's kind of tricky. But start implementing the strategies that I told you about. Start removing some of these things and you'll start to see that your blood sugar is a little bit more balanced and that you will be able to sleep a little bit better. Sometimes it's as much as like cutting out screens at night, lowering the lights at night, reading a book that kind of puts you to sleep, like putting yourself in bed earlier, not getting movement throughout the day, getting morning sunlight. There's a lot of things that we could do during the day that can set us up for good sleep at night. Another thing that's going to impact our blood sugar would be inactivity or lack of exercise. So our muscles become insulin resistant when we don't use them. And so it's really important to use your muscles and use them in a way that you're using a ton of effort. So the intensity is also really important. So this is something that you can incorporate as you're trying to improve your blood sugar, are these activities that really use your muscles a lot. So I love strength training, and this could just be some like plyometrics and body weight stuff, or it could be lifting weights. So those would be some other things. And then another thing on my list would be snacking. So if you are someone who's a snacker, perhaps you've developed that habit because your blood sugar crashes every so often and you've intuitively added this in to prevent your blood sugar from crashing or to prevent yourself from feeling this hunger, which feels uncomfortable. So if that's the case, you might not be able to, like, if you know you have reactive hypoglycemia, if you know you can't go that long between meals, I don't suggest cutting out the snacking right away. I recommend having a lower carbohydrate, like mini meal in between. But if you can, I want you to try to cut out the snacks. And what you can do is take your snacks and have them just right at the end of your meal. So you're eating them all together, and that would be a really good start for someone. If you're not snacking, I don't recommend that you add snacks to the end of your meal. I recommend you keep doing what you're doing, but this is a good way to kind of get yourself away from eating every so often. So every time we eat, we have a blood sugar and insulin response to what we eat. And so if you want to reverse that and you want to improve your blood sugar, the goal is to be able to go a long time without eating, without having these drops in your blood sugar. And that is going to help keep your body burning fat for fuel. It's going to keep your blood sugar more regulated. But at the beginning, if you're having reactive hypoglycemia, you want to cut out the snacks. If you can go for a long period without snacking, I challenge you to try to cut out all the snacks. And if you can't make it to the next meal just because you're truly hungry, it means you did not have enough protein or fat at the previous meal. So try having bigger meals instead of snacking. So condense all your food into eating 2 or 3 times a day instead of having 6 small meals or something like that. And 2 more, eating late at night can really negatively impact your blood sugar. We want to be eating, we want to be detoxing while we're sleeping, not digesting. And eating late at night is a really big one, that just because a lot of times people aren't making the best choices late at night. They're choosing snacks and then they're going to bed and their blood sugar is super high. And then they have a crash in the middle of the night and it wakes them up and they have this pounding heart in the middle of the night because they ate too late. So eating like 3 to 4 hours before bed is ideal. And then the last one, of course, another thing that can negatively impact your blood sugar is stress. So I had a really stressful moment. I had a client call me and I was talking to her and she was telling me that her doctor was putting her on this terrible medication for type 2 diabetes that actually raises your insulin. I'm like, this is the worst thing ever. This is actually worsening the disease. And then I started making this rant of a story and I was getting so hyped up and I was so stressed. I had to actually lift weights after that because my body was so stressed and I saw my blood sugar went up like 20 points and I wasn't even eating anything. It was just simply because of the stress. And some people can have a really, really big spike from stress. So if we're constantly stressed, We are not going to be putting ourselves in a mode to be healing and losing weight and digesting and detoxing. So we digest, detox, lose weight, and balance our hormones when we're in a parasympathetic state. So we need to get out of this chronic stress state. And so I guess I will leave you with the 4-7-8 breath, which I talked about at the beginning of the episode. So let's all do it together. We're going to inhale for 4, hold for 7, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale for 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Inhale 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold for 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale 8, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right, everyone. I hope you feel more relaxed. I hope you feel more informed. I hope you feel more empowered to make decisions that will help your health and take your health and put it in your own hands, because doctors certainly are not trained to help you with things like this. And I do have to say, some doctors are saying like, oh, do a keto diet and try fasting. And that makes me really, really, really happy. It's that when they know that, oh, try this, but they don't know how to tell you the advice. So if a doctor has sent you here, I'm really happy about that. But oftentimes doctors just, they do not have the tools to help you fix your blood sugar, because what they have been trained to do is totally different. They've been trained that if your blood sugar is under 100, it's okay, which is not true if you're fasting. Ideally, you want it to be 70 to 85 with no symptoms of reactive hypoglycemia. And if you're 85 to 100, that is not ideal fasting blood sugar. And so they don't know that. So they're already missing you up to that cutoff point. Then once your blood sugar gets to 100, over 100, they tell you you're close to being pre-diabetic or pre-diabetic. And what do they do? They watch it. They watch your blood sugar. Literally, what is that even doing? You're continuing your same lifestyle. So of course it's going to get worse. And so they watch it. Like, what kind of treatment is watching it? Like, if my clients are like, hey, Danny, I'm really struggling, I want to work with you, and they pay me and they're working with me, I'm like, oh, your blood sugar is here, let's just watch it. Like, you would fire me. You'd be like, let me have my money back. You're not helping me. Well, we go to doctors and we pay them and they tell us, let's watch it. Oh my gosh. Like, my blood sugar is going to start going up because I'm getting stressed already. But, and then once you get a high blood sugar that's over 126 or whatever it is, they will put you on medication. And so if you want to do that route, that's totally fine, because everyone has their own choice. We can all make our own choices. But that is what will happen if you go to a doctor. If you do not want to be on medication and you want to reverse your blood sugar trend that's going high, it is absolutely 100% doable, and you can do it with just diet and lifestyle. You do not need a pill to do it. You cannot cure a disease caused by diet and lifestyle with a pill. You can only reverse it with more diet and lifestyle things. So I hope that you are feeling more informed, and I hope that I will see you at my blood sugar masterclass, and we are going to take an even deeper dive into all things blood sugar and insulin resistance, and you can ask me questions and be eligible for giveaways. So I hope that I will see you there, and I hope that you have a lovely rest of your week and weekend. All right, everyone, talk to you soon. Bye.